Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. There's been a huge surge in data usage across all sectors of the economy of late, and in the financial sector, recent research by MIT's Mariam Farboudi suggests big data is, well, kind of a double-edged sword.
More data resolves risks today, but creates more risk tomorrow.
Farboudi also says that data is disproportionately benefiting the larger firms. Mariam Farboudi is an assistant professor of finance at the MIT Sloan School of Management. Her recent research on data in finance has been published in the National Bureau of Economic Research. Farboudi was invited to speak at the IMF's Institute for Capacity Development. I sat down with her after her presentation.
So one of the things that struck me in your research is how the fact that large firms are getting larger how they're employing more people than they ever have in the past and that they're replacing small firms. And with all this talk of big data and the gig economy and startups, it seemed counterintuitive to me that that was happening. What's driving this trend toward larger firms?
So I think there are a couple of places that actually data shows up in this trend. I mean, let me start by saying that there are a number of completely alternative explanations on why large firms are growing larger or replacing smaller firms, but let me focus on the data ones. If you think about data in the real economy, one thing that differentiates data from other forms of productivity is that data is a byproduct of production. So the more you produce, the more data you can collect, which then help you produce either more effectively or at a better quality, and then helps you grow larger. And that's one force that pushes toward large firms getting larger because they just have more room to accumulate data, which is byproduct of their production. At the same time, I want to say, referring to the gig economy, you do have a very important point that I think we have recently observed a very sharp growth of small data-intensive firms, which became very, very large, like Facebook, like Google, like Amazons of the world. So it's not only size, which is important in being a data-productive firm, but also if you're a data-savvy firm, you can start very small, but grow rather quickly, which does kind of speak to the gig economy. But we kind of see that these leaders of the gig economy are actually getting very, very big. Then the other thing, which is more related to startups and a little outside of scope of my research, is that one trend that's happening more recently is, for a number of reasons, what some of the larger firms are doing more recently is buying up these small firms and then very often shelving those technologies.
Just to sort of curb the competition.
Exactly, just to curb the competition. Another force that can help big data favors large firms over small ones is through cost of capital. So in the sense that, well, all the firms have to finance themselves to kind of grow larger. And the financing terms that firms face depend on their perceived risk. And one role of data is to help investors. When investors can process more data, they can better understand the risk of different firms, which then help the firms basically be able to borrow or finance themselves at better terms. Mm. Now, why does this improvement in data processing technology favor a large firm? Because there's more data available about them. Like a very small, young firm, there's not that much data about it.
So they don't have much history.
They don't have much history. So even if the investors have a ton of data, well, there's nothing to learn about these guys while they can increase their learnings about how much they learn about the big firms. And that disproportionately reduces the perceived risk of big firms. So their cost of capital disproportionately falls. Hmm.
So another thing that you hear a lot about these days, and you do refer to it in your research, is that, you know, some people are saying that data is the new oil in that both of these things can influence and are influencing economies very rapidly. But oil is a commodity and subject to ebbs and flows. Is data, do you think that data is subject to those same dynamics somehow, like fluctuations?
So I think this is a very interesting question. because it's exactly this question that I think leads to whether we need a different sort of economics to understand data, or we can directly use the same economics that we were using for oil for data. And I would like to argue that we need different types of economics because there are things between data and oil which are radically different. One is, I think, what I already alluded to, which is data is a byproduct of production, while oil is just an input. The other thing which I think is very important and does speak both to ownership and to privacy is the point that data is non-rival. So I can use the same data and it's not going to be depreciated. You can use it at the same time, while for oil, this is less relevant. So there's going to be different economics governing data and oil. The other thing which I think is easier to address with oil, harder with data, is the issue of ownership. But when, like, data is produced in a transaction, when, for instance, I buy a shoe, I send you as a producer that I like this type or this quality is good, whether this signal is mine and I can say, I don't want to send it to you, or it's owned by you. While for oil, the issue of ownership is a little easier to resolve. It doesn't necessarily need as much regulation as data. That's another thing where I think makes the economics rather different.
And you just mentioned signals, and I like the way that you define data, or at least maybe I'll ask you to define data in terms of how you think of data for your research. You know, as far as I can understand, it's much about information and signals and how those signals can be manipulated. Talk to me a little bit about how you think data should be defined in economics terms.
So the way I think about data, as you mentioned, is data is a signal about some random variable that agents don't know at the time when they want to make decisions. And the more data that agents have, that means their perception of that random phenomenon or random object is closer to the reality, which helps them make more precise decisions, decisions that are closer to the decision they would make if they were not facing this uncertainty. And basically, more data means more signals or signals of better quality. So this reduction in uncertainty can help agents in different shapes or forms. For instance, if they want to infer the taste of people, more data helps them get closer to the taste of people. The more people that I know what they like, the better I can say what the average taste is.
So it's more data equals more precision, right?
Exactly. More data means more precision, less variance.
I see. And so how does that play on financial markets?
So in financial market, it shows up in different forms. One is that in terms of investors choosing their portfolios or what investment they want to finance or what positions they want to take. And basically, the less investors know a risk, they are less certain which side of position they should take. And so their investments on average are going to be less profitable, risk adjusted. So more data helps them have a better understanding or form better expectations about the actual realizations of the instruments, value of the instruments that they're taking. And so this higher precision, lower variance makes their investments more profitable.
But how does that affect pricing?
Oh, so it does affect prices, but I think one interesting thing is that it's kind of a double-edged sword, because more information makes prices more informative, which makes, in a sense, improves financial efficiency, because prices move more, respond more to changes in fundamentals. At the same time, more data creates risk. Because the prices move more today, they can also move more tomorrow. And to the extent that you as an agent or an investor would need to retrade again, if prices are very sensitive to fundamentals, and to the extent that you cannot perfectly predict all the movements, small movements in fundamental can move future prices. So in that sense, data being incorporated in prices and making them more informative is a double-edged sword. So more data resolves risks today but creates more risk tomorrow.
Hmm. So in this process of determining the quality of the data, you're always measuring these signals against some noise, and you refer to a signal-to-noise ratio, which I thought was interesting. What is the noise, and how do you go about improving your signal-to-noise ratio?
One rather simple way to think about noise is sentiments in the market. So for some reason, they are less informed people, and, well, there is some Fed announcement, and they're worried the economy is going down. They all go sell their shares or their trade in assets without any particular knowledge about the fundamental. Another simple example is like liquidity-driven trades. There are investors, because of exposure to unrelated stuff, they need to unload positions. And that creates noise. It's not that they're selling an asset because they think the price is falling, so they better offload it. It's just because they need the money. And then, of course, I think one thing that statistical traders are doing more and more over time is trying to understand, to observe these type of trades. And so from that, trying to understand what part of the movements in price is coming from these uninformed trades versus what part of it is because of informed trades. So that's the sense that by learning from these demand, these agents can benefit.
But when you're talking about signals and noise, it seems that it would be fairly easy to manipulate. And is that something that we need to worry about?
I do think that's something that we do need to worry about. And the more data becomes relevant in the economy, the more agents who do have the data have an incentive to either withhold it or manipulate different agents' beliefs through, for instance, if I have to sell off a large block in the financial sector, if I have to sell a large block of shares, I try to sell in small pieces so that people don't understand that I really had bad news and I wanted to sell. Another very relevant thing is that there is evidence that broker-dealers have been discriminating across some of their clients and sharing data with some of them and not sharing with some other ones, which would give some a comparative advantage. So this is another thing that I think there needs to be some worrying about.
At the beginning of one of your papers, I saw this chart that I thought was really interesting, where you compared CPU speeds or computer processing speeds with economic growth. How do you correlate advances in technology with economic growth?
Well, I think I would say this was more to make this point that the processing growth, it's been at least 25% a year, okay? But we don't see it in total factor productivity. And there's classic ways to measure this. Mm-hmm. And given this huge processing power, improvements in productivity should have been faster, but the two curves don't seem to match up even, they're not even close. So, and this exactly really begs this question of where has all of this big data gone, in a sense. So is a lot of it using to be manipulating others, front-running others, stifling competition, and things like that, or there's huge mismeasurements? And there is something big that we are missing. And I think this is still this measurement is a big issue of debate. And there's a lot of room for.
So the productivity paradox is a thing. Okay, so with all this data, we can reduce some of the risk in investments and people have the opportunity to have better portfolios, make more money. Is data, in your opinion, being shared equally?
I think not. Not in the financial sector, neither in the real economy. I think in the financial sector, there are measures, for instance, what we talked about, price informativeness, which looks like large growth firms are disproportionately benefiting from the increase in processing power, while the other firms' price informativeness is stagnating. In the real economy, again, it looks like large firms are benefiting in certain aspects. Firms who are more data savvy, of course, are better able to ride this revolution although at the same time, it could come at the social cost of having monopoly power on the data and consumers not sharing these benefits.
So the distributional aspects of data are such that they may well be exacerbating inequality.
Absolutely. So I think there is evidence that inequality is growing in certain respects, but how much of it can be attributed to the data, I think, needs more careful empirical work.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mariam Farboudi is an assistant professor of finance at the MIT Sloan School of Management. She presented her recent research on big data in finance to the IMF's Institute for Capacity Development. Go to imf.org to learn more about the Institute's knowledge sharing and online training opportunities. Mariam Farboudi's recent papers on big data in finance are published by the National Bureau of Economic Research. If you like this podcast, subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts, and you can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.